This program is intended for mature audiences only.
Welcome to Sex, Tantra, and Kama Sutra. I'm your host, Francesca Gentile, and with me today is Evelina Rose. Evelina Rose is a Tantra teacher for over 14 years who teaches in Sonoma in the San Francisco Bay Area. She has a master's in psychology. She practices metatherapy, a spiritual therapy with including energetic healings and channeled readings. She's very well known for her CD, Bliss Fire Tantra, Women's Erotic Pleasuring Meditation, and is featured in an award-winning documentary called Hearts Cracked Open.
Start with Tantra cards. I think the basis there is breathing, that you bring your full breath to the experience, which brings you into your body, that because all the pleasure is in the body, the power is in the body, is being present in the body. So you're learning to really open to your own chakras and your own life force. I think the depth of being erotic is present. Probably the biggest thing you can offer your partner is to be totally present in your own heart and in your own body.
And the Kundalini, how would you describe Kundalini?
It's the life force in the body. It's seen as a serpentine energy or as fire. When you activate it, what's natural is for it to want to flow up this core of the body. So sometimes when people move this energy and have moved it for a while in lovemaking, for instance, and then they meditate, it'll be as if they're traveling out into the whole universe. People feel like they're out in the stars or the planets because it opens such a broad experience of consciousness.
Welcome, Evelina.
Thank you. Delightful to be here.
Evelina, you are very well known for reading pujas. And this is a key part of a tantric spiritual sexual practice, but it's not a common term for Westerners to know. What is puja? What does that mean?
Puja, the word puja actually has many meanings, including altar. So it's a portal, a place for doing sacred ritual. And in the West, we tend to mean by puja a circle where there's an outer circle and an inner circle. Usually you have women in the outer circle and men in the inner circle. They're partnered, and the facilitator of the puja then will guide each couple through certain breathing practices or tantric practices, and you complete with that person, have a sacred experience, and then move on to another, and move on to another.
So let me see if I'm understanding this, and it's clear for our listening audience, is that a puja is a practice, a sacred practice, a worship practice, and when people go to a puja, such as you might lead, there's going to be a almost like a ring around the rosy, there's going to be an outer circle of women facing maybe in and an inner circle of men facing out or vice versa. Everyone will have one person that they're standing in front of. They're led by someone like you through some exercises of intention, heart, spirit, and then they move to another person, and this goes on and on. So they're going to be interacting with many people throughout a puja event. Would they? How long does a puja normally take?
Well, it really depends. We've done pujas in our introductory evenings that are 20 minutes long. I call them appetizers because everyone wants longer. Mostly my workshop pujas are 2 hours, or a puja at a party or gathering might be 2 or 3 hours. And then for advanced students, some of whom are tantra teachers, I do pujas that are 5 hours. And the interesting thing is, it's never long enough. Tantra is its own energy source, so when you're breathing that much, you're energizing your body. and you go so deeply into timelessness and into such sacred space that it's as if there is no time.
What do people get out of a puja that has them feel like it's never long enough?
I think we get deeply seen and deeply met. There's this important practice in Tantra of soul gazing or eye gazing, looking into each other's eyes as you breathe, and you're really invited to come deep into your own heart chakra and receive that soul gazing from your heart. So I think we get that need to be seen met. I think a lot of intimacy needs get met. There's in the puja, we're practicing erotic arts and romantic arts within a very safe and well-held container that keeps it sacred.
Now, you spoke about tantric arts and tantric practices. Now we're speaking of romantic arts and erotic arts. I'd love to know more about each one of those. Why don't we start, which one would you like to start with, erotic, romantic, or tantric arts?
Let's start with tantric arts. I think the basis there is breathing, that you bring your full breath to the experience, which brings you into your body, that because all the pleasure is in the body, the power is in the body, is being present in the body. So you're learning to really open to your own chakras and your own life force, and to, with your partner, move the life force in your body with your breath. And as you bring it up through the center of the body, the central core, to the heart of the chakras, you're activating and energizing the chakras, but you're also moving toward ecstatic states. And so in the tantric breath, there's a way that you connect through the eye gazing with the other, and then the breath takes you on a journey. And every person is different, every time it's different. A journey of allowing the life force to move in your body and to feel the beauty of that flow as it comes up and through and will fountain around and envelop you, bathe you in kundalini.
That sounds so beautiful, this experience of this energy moving and being seen and being met. I think you're correct in that we all long for that. And how is that different than or distinct from a romantic art or an erotic art? What might happen in a puja that would enhance our practice of romance?
We work with people to understand that passion, like fire, needs air. And so you learn through some of the practices, which are the practices in a puja are built upon exercises from workshops. So you learn the skills in the workshop and then the puja is practice. So some of the practices are learning how to approach very gently so that you're coming into the person's energy field gently and you're giving them a chance to kind of hunger for the touch. And if you do touch or if you do kiss, that it's a kiss that's offered and once it's received, maybe you come back and you give some air to it. You let there be a seduction. I do a practice of a kiss from afar, and so quite a bit of it is the seduction before the kiss. Because we tend, outside of pujas, to move into something that feels like a kiss or a touch and to just keep taking it further. But in romance, it's increasing the desire for the connection and playing with that desire. So we also teach like erotic dance, which is another very romantic way to approach someone. To dance in a way that you're offering yourself, but maybe not really, and it builds a bit of a tension, of a excitement. By that dance.
That's really almost the definition of romance or courtship, is that sense of tension and building, anticipation and excitement. And we can forget how to do that or become a little habitual about how we approach one another. And it's wonderful that people would be able to go to a puja and practice consciously building that romantic tension and excitement. And I'd love to also hear more about the erotic arts, maybe some practices about that, after we come back from a word from our sponsors.
Listen to A Taste of Sex, Erotic Poetry Reading, a companion program to Life in an Orgasm-Based Community. It's open mic night at One Taste San Francisco, a weekly audio program on personallifemedia.com.
Welcome back to Sex, Tantra, and Kama Sutra, bringing you the soul of sex. With us today is Evelina Rose, and we were talking about the romantic arts, the tantric arts, the erotic arts, as they're expressed in the puja experience. And we were just about to get to the erotic arts. Evelina, would you give us a little taste, a tease of those erotic arts that might show up in a group puja?
Certainly. I think the depth of being erotic is present. Probably the biggest thing you can offer your partner is to be totally present in your own heart and in your own body. And I think so often where something might feel erotic, but it doesn't quite go there, is where someone overextends themselves, or sometimes men get into a place of feeling, I have to do something for this woman. But when you drop into presence and you are totally giving all of your attention and focus to the connection and you're in yourself, then the other can be in themselves. And that's where Eros has room to move. So in a puja, there are many ways to be erotic, to touch very slowly and very gently. And one thing that really seems to open people to their heart is very soft, feathery touch, like on the face with the fingertips, the backs of the fingers, soft and slow. Wherever you are touching, if you take your eyes there and let it be seen how much you're enjoying that touch. And it's a kind of touch that's about awakening the other's body. That can be wonderfully erotic. In the exercises that you learn in Tantra, you learn how to bring energy like up the legs, bring it toward the genitals, the yoni we call it for women, or the lingam for men. Not touching, but teasing and letting it be noticed that you're bringing energy in that direction. To bring energy up the inner, the core of the body, we call it the inner flute, up the centers of the chakras with a slow and lingering touch that can be very erotic. Or to, on the back, just to tap right above the sacrum and slowly draw the energy right up the spine. That can open the erotic energies in between two people.
That sounds so delicious. Where exactly is the sacrum? So it's on the back. Where on the back?
It's right at the base of the spinal column, so right above the hips, right where the hips come together is the sacrum.
Where some people have those adorable dimples?
Exactly, right by the dimples. And that's seen as the seat of the kundalini. So just to kind of play with the energy there, make circles or fingernails lightly there, or a little tapping, can help awaken the kundalini a bit.
And the kundalini, how would you describe kundalini?
It's the life force in the body. It's seen as a serpentine energy or as fire. When you activate it, what's natural is for it to want to flow up this core of the body. I also think of it as the healing force in the body, because it's the only energy that is so generalized it can be used everywhere in the body, and it's designed to be able to pump it up this inner flute with the what's called the PC muscles, the pubococcygeus muscle, what some think of as Kegels. So it's designed to move in the body and to create these altered states through that movement.
And these Kegels, the PC, that's that muscle that stops the urinary flow. Both men and women can do this. It's not just that women, you know, we always hear women are asked to do Kegels to keep their vagina strong or to help them in certain ways. But this isn't just for women.
That's right. It's for men and women.
Wonderful. And does this lead to those ecstatic states? You mentioned earlier that these kinds of practices lead to ecstatic states. And what are those states? What do we mean by an ecstatic state?
We mean altered states of consciousness. When you know how to move the kundalini, and it's an undulatory breath with using the PC muscles. You can learn it in many of the books on Tantra. When you know how to do that, it takes the life force up into the head, and it activates brain cells and connects right and left hemispheres. So it's expanding beyond normal consciousness, opening into the higher chakras, the higher centers of consciousness, and activating more of a multidimensional experience of the world. So sometimes when people move this energy and have moved it for a while in lovemaking, for instance, and then they meditate, it'll be as if they're traveling out into the whole universe. People feel like they're out in the stars or the planets because it opens such a broad experience of consciousness.
This sounds really like something that, you know, that everyone would want. Who wouldn't want their lovemaking to be so expansive that they're out in the universe, out with the stars, but they're still connected to their beloved. It's not just like they're traveling through planets and stars. There's still a sense of connection, or perhaps even a deeper connection with their beloved.
I would think that if two were making love and they went there, it would be a matter of first so expanding beyond their normal selves that they become one with everything. So you're very connected with your beloved and with all that is. You're connected with, there's no separation. And that's the furthest extent of the ecstatic state is everything is union.
I would like to talk more about and discover more from you about how we might do this at home with our own partner, bring some of these practices at home. And or even if we don't have a partner, if this puja is something that we could do even by ourselves, after a break and a word from our sponsors.
Listen to Sex, Love, and Intimacy, a podcast providing weekly audio workshops for your pleasure and connection on personallifemedia.com.
Welcome back to Sex, Tantra, and Kama Sutra, bringing you the soul of sex. We're still talking to beautiful and radiant Evelina Rose, wonderful tantric puja teacher, metatherapy counselor who does energetic healings and channeled readings, and who is featured on an award-winning documentary, Hearts Cracked Open, and has her own CD, Bliss Fire Tantra, Women's Erotic Pleasuring Meditation. We were talking about the pujas, the erotic arts and the pujas, the ecstatic states that are available. And, Evelina, is there a particular way that people talk, a way of communication in a puja that's important?
I believe in pujas as well as in lovemaking, that you want to learn how to speak in a way that is all positive and that allows the other to know what you would like from them. If you're connecting with someone in a puja or intimately, you want to assume that they absolutely would love to please you. So when you tell them what pleases you, that's honoring them. When you don't tell them, it's as if you don't believe they would care. But when you do tell them, it's a communication of, I know you would love to please me, and here's what would do that. And then once you've made a request, you find a way to follow it with a reward. So if you ask for touch to be lighter, you might say lighter still, and then, oh, that's it, that's right, that really feels good. So whenever you're communicating, we talk about making a love sandwich. So you say something you like first, then you make your request, or give feedback, or whatever needs to be spoken, and then something you like or you love at the other end. And in that way, people are able to hear it within a framework of honoring and respect, and that you are experiencing them. So often we give feedback not acknowledging the good of what's happened, or if someone then gives us what we ask, we don't let them know how much we like it. And in puja especially, and in tantric relationships, there's a lot of acknowledging each other, of honoring each other and saying it out loud. I really want to honor you for asking. It means a lot to me that you would respect me in that way. I want to honor you for hearing me. A lot of saying things that support our self-esteem and their self-esteem. So when you ask as if you believe you can be listened to, it makes you feel better about yourself. And it also makes the other person feel better because they're being respected.
This is truly lovely, Evelina. This is a shift. You know, when we watch porn movies, if any of us watch porn movies, it's very, ooh, baby, and, you know, give it to me. And, you know, there's kind of a raw primalness, which is you know, fun and wonderful. And yet sometimes there can be a lack of this really honoring tenderness that inspires the heart to open and the spirit to open. And I'm guessing that for some of us, it might feel a little, for some of our listeners, it might feel a little bit different at first. And yet what I'm hearing is that this is that really deep place of when we say we long for intimacy, that this is crucial in providing that.
It is, because it helps you be seen deep within. What we, in Tantra, we're seeing the other as the divine beloved. And even if you're in front of someone you don't know well, they're the representative of the divine. And especially with a partner or a beloved, if you will drop into your heart and let your heart expand, and you're really sitting in your heart, you're going to see their divinity. And by seeing that, you reflect it to them. And so we're actually helping each other evolve by witnessing what's divine in each other. It's a much deeper intimacy. And at first it feels very vulnerable, and then it feels so nurturing. It's like a deep drink of something we've waited for all our lives, of being witnessed at such a deep level.
And when we say honoring the divine, it's not like we're suddenly seeing our beloved wearing a toga and standing on Mount Olympus. It's, in a way, it's we're saying that we're seeing both their beauty of their soul, but also that tenderness and that vulnerability. Is that close?
That absolutely. And that we're noticing that they are, underneath their personality, an eternal being. That somewhere under everything that's happened to us is a part of us that can never be wounded. It's always pure and innocent and whole. And so we're acknowledging that. When you're acknowledging it, it does go to deep tenderness, just a deep sense of almost awe to be in the presence of the divine. So when two people connect, they will often begin before an altar and light candles or say prayers or intentions. So it takes them into that place of feeling there's something bigger here than just your personality and my personality.
And by altar, we're not saying that, I was raised Catholic, we're not saying that we're sneaking into church late at night. and you know, that kind of altar. When we're saying altar, you're meaning it in a different sense, kind of a home altar. And what might be a home altar? I mean, how would our listeners create their home altar?
That's actually a beautiful experience for two people to do together. And you start with any small table, small surface, a beautiful cloth that you both like. And then what's lovely is to each bring a few things that represent something important to you. Not even necessarily have to be something you should think is sacred. You want some things that represent sacred, whatever that means to you, and things that are important. Maybe a little frog figurine that represents the time in high school that you achieved something amazing and you were given this figurine, or whatever it is, something that reveals a piece of you, and usually candles. So then you can together set this altar and share what these pieces mean to you. And that's a deep heart sharing. So already you're closer and more connected. And one of the points, I think, of doing ritual, setting an altar together, or doing a ritual with the altar when you start, is it helps still the mind. It helps signal the subconscious, this is an ordinary life, something different is happening here. And I think what spiritual practices aim at is somehow getting between the thoughts and quieting the thoughts of the rest of life enough that you can get a now and step into that now, because that's where the timelessness is. So you do candle, you light candles, you either set an altar or honor the altar, say prayers or set intentions. Doesn't matter what your belief system is, you do whatever feels like it invokes that sense of something larger than self for the two of you.
And this creating a table, an area that's a focus for spirit, for joy, for peace, that cues us that we're entering into a different state of mind, a different state of being. This is wonderful for two people at home in their bedroom. Is this something that a single person could do who maybe doesn't have a sweetheart yet or a regular sweetheart yet?
It's a beautiful thing for a single person to do. If you're single and it's a time in your life when that's the most appropriate way to be, you make an altar, in a sense, to yourself and to the beloved that you are, that honors you and honors your beloved relationship with the universe, whatever that means to you. So perhaps images of beings or spirits or teachers that are important, and images that represent, if you're a man, that represent a man who's really in touch with his heart and his sexuality. For a woman, images that help you come to really honor and appreciate your femininity. If you're at a place and you're single and you'd like a relationship, then you can do an altar where you bring images of two people, of couples, of connection, of whatever represents relationship or sexuality. So you can use the altar to empower your prayers and your desire for a relationship, help to energize that desire. And then as a single person, you can sit before this altar and do your intentions, light candles, do some of the breathing practices in Tantra. Sometimes it's nice to put a mirror on the altar and do some self-loving, stroking of your body and witnessing yourself, enjoying touching yourself and pleasuring yourself. That can be a beautiful tantric exchange with yourself at an altar.
Evelina, I love the way you think. And these are just such beautiful ideas for individuals, and many things that you said for couples an individual could do, and what you said for individuals a couple could do, or in front of one another. It'd be so, so intimate, so beautiful. And I'd love to hear more, and I know our listening audience would as well. So how can people find out more about you, your workshops, your pujas? What's the best way for them to get a hold of you?
They can find out through my website, which is tantraforwomen.com, tantraforwomen spelled out, .com. I originally was teaching only women because there weren't many people teaching women Tantra. And now I have one community that is women, including many lesbian and bi women, and another community that is mostly heterosexual and bi men and women. So they find work information there about the pujas I offer and also workshops that I do with men and women.
And Evelina, I want to thank you so much for joining us.
You're most welcome.
And if you want to learn more about Evelina, her workshops, her CD, the Heart Cracked Wide Open documentary, you can find out that information and more, the transcript of the show and more of our shows at www.personallifemedia.com. That's www.personallifemedia.com.
Find more great shows like this on personallifemedia.com.